Helen Stone, Reel 6. Yes, you were saying when...
I remember nearly everything from the camp. And sometimes even now, I remember suddenly something that I thought I forgot, but I do remember. But I couldn't remember which block I was in. How did the block look in Ravensbrück? And do you know, I read a book by an Englishman, Lord Russell, not the philosopher, but somebody else, that has never been in a camp and never been definitely in Ravensbrück. And that is the scourge of the swastika. And you know, from all the books, and there is, you know how many books about it, one of the best that I read, by a man, by an Englishman that has never been in a camp, he starts with a sentence that there was no, I can't remember the sentence, and I can't get it in the library, the book. I just want to see that sentence. That we had no tears left. And it's true. I never, never cried in the camp. Never. Never one tear have I lost. And I don't remember any other, don't remember any voices crying. I don't remember seeing anybody cry. And I said, how did he know that we had no tears? I said, no, not a genius, that man. Unless we had somebody that was there, that was telling him, and he wrote it so beautifully, I don't know. Anyway, reading that book, he mentions the tent. I said, I was in the tent. You know what's a tent? At a very big circus. That is a tent. And that's where I was. There was no place in blocks. Because all the other camps wouldn't let us in. They were already overflowing because all Auschwitz people were going into those camps. Back in Bergen, a lot went. And we went to Ravensbrück. But there was no place in the blocks, so they built a tent.
A tent?
Tent.
A tent.
You know, circus has a tent made out of material.
Oh, like a marquee. A silk. Yes.
That material which is...
canvas.
Like canvas.
Yes, I knew
it. I was in that silk, and I couldn't remember for years and years. Where was I? How did it happen? Who was with me in that block? I only remember I met my cousin there. From Auschwitz. And she used to go on Außenkommando, meaning going out of the camp to work in the woods. And there the Germans had a fire. And she tried to be the last so that she could get to the fire and bring me some burnt wood. Can't believe me. That is good for diarrhea. And I had dysentery, that's worse than diarrhea. But she was bringing me that burnt wood. She used to take two stones, break it up like a powder, and I ate it, the fist, and that saved me. My bread that I used to get, my portion of bread in Ravensbrück, I gave her because I couldn't eat anything. That's why I told you that in Swadow I was really hungry, because I wasn't ill. That was the only time that I had no illness at all. Just hungry. So, that Russell, it's still him I remember where I was in Ravensbrück, and she used to bring me that burnt wood. There's carbo ligni or carbo animali. Carbo animali is burnt bones from animals. But that was good enough, that carbo ligni. She was a nurse before the war, so she knew that should be, she knew I had dysentery. And
it would be like a charcoal.
That's right. Looked like a charcoal. And I remember I had about fistfuls of it. She used to say, how did she bring it? I don't know. But how did she get it? You know, that she tried to be the last one in the march so that she can get to the fire the way they had.
Sort of a bonfire it would be, would it?
That's right. And she used to bring it. She lived in Israel after the war. Mm-hmm.
So this tent, this
tent.
Yes, that you were in,
yeah.
That would have been in one of the Appellplatz, would it, in
Ravensbrück? I haven't been in Ravensbrück before. And I see very little from Ravensbrück because there were always the American planes there. American, English planes. So whenever we went out to work, mind you, the first 2 weeks I was sitting on the bucket. And that they let me there. And actually they wouldn't let me 2 weeks to sit on the bucket. And then from Ravensbrück, oh yes.
What work did you do at Ravensbrück?
We never did any work. Wherever we went, we went for about 5 minutes, we had to run back to the block. It was on a tent. No, Ravensbrück, not
to the tent.
The tent.
Were you given enough food? No, were you given food?
Ravensbrück was like an Auschwitz. And as I said at the beginning, I couldn't eat anyway, but anyway, I didn't go to Malaysia. And from Ravensbrück, because the Russians must have been there. Ravensbrück is north of Germany, so the Russians were earlier than May. So we went down all the way to Slovakia, to Svodov. And in Svodov, and we came in the afternoon, and there was Appell. And I looked up all the way. We were only 6 girls left from Auschwitz. 6 girls. The rest were strangers, from that camp, some from this camp, some, but 6 that I knew. 5 of them couldn't speak a proper Polish. 2 of them were from the same town as Ben Gurion. You know Ben Gurion? They knew him since he was a child. They couldn't speak the Polish so that they could say that they are aliens, Polish aliens. So I told them, just don't talk. Try not to talk. Just 2 words, don't talk. And funny enough, they were all right. And me, the Hauptschafirin, said, Liechtenstein? That's not a Polish name. So I said, my grandfather was a folk surgeon. Once I had a little bit of it. And she gave me some work in Svodov. To work with the French girls, the woods to collect wood. I speak a few languages, but not French. So all I knew to say is, quick. And I said, no, I won't make it here. It was beautiful. It was April, May, warm, and it's beautiful here. You know, it's near Marienbad, near Karlsbad. And I said, no, I didn't die in Auschwitz. I didn't die in Ravensbrück. I died here of hunger. And I went to the Hauptschafirin, to the one that said Liechtenstein. By the way, she was Jewish. After the war, I got to know about it. And I told her, look, I have a Technische Schule. It means I went to a school and I know how to cook, how to clean. Could I work in the kitchen? And as being Volksdeutsche, I told her that I'm half German. And she said yes. And I was cooking for the gypsies. That was the worst. Because the others maybe had a few peels of potatoes swimming. The gypsies really had no salt. We had no salt. No salt whatsoever. And I don't know why, just no salt whatsoever. So the soup was just dirty water, but it was warm. And sometimes there was a bone. Sometimes there was a bone there, horse's bone, with shrapnel still in it. But there were maybe little bits of meat. I used to put it in my pants. I had pants with these strings here so that I won't lose these things because I kept everything in my pants. And to take it to the stinger. That's the one that add up the poems. So the stinger has got something more. She was working somewhere also in the woods. It's what I was actually hunger. Abnormal hunger. Now and then at the end, that was my stupidity again. As I was working next to a gypsy girl, we started talking. You can't work next to each other. We are both prisoners. And I asked her where she's from, and she was from Beijing. Well, not Beijing, but outside. They lived in caravans, the gypsies, outside Beijing. And what did you do? She worked for the Browners. Idiot me, said Browner there on Sanchezka, that street. He said, yes, how do you know? But they only had Jewish friends. I said, but I wasn't. But it didn't help. She was more clever than I. And she told them that I'm Jewish, and most probably the five others are also. So they put us in a cellar. The worst thing was, all right, no food. We were used no food, but no water. There was a Czech doctor woman there as well. I don't know why she was in the camp. And she used to come sometimes to us, not to bring us food, because she didn't have a ceremony. But she told us how to behave, not to lose any energy. That we can, she told us even how many days we can be without water and without bread, not to move about, just to lie or sit. She used to come to us quite often. How did she do it? Because it was dangerous to come to us, but she did. And then one day we hear noise outside, but terrible noise. But we still sit, we shouldn't move, so we don't move. But then somebody opened the door, and light came in, and the sun was so strong that we just couldn't keep our eyes open. And they said, they didn't say Americans, there are soldiers here, and the Germans are running away. So of course we went out. I wanted to say we ran out, we couldn't run, we just came out. But we didn't open our eyes. She told us as well to keep your eyes shut if you come out. Keep your eyes shut. We had our eyes shut, but I wanted to know who the soldiers are. So I saw tanks with five stars it's Russian. How could the Russian come here to Slovakia? All right, Russian, not Russian, they are not Germans, first of all. And slowly I was opening the eyes a little bit more. Well, I knew that I wasn't sure if they are Americans or they are Russians. But I was wearing a belt that I found in Auschwitz. The belt had a buckle and an inscription in Hebrew, Hanoar Hatzioni Hazak Vermas. That belt I wore all the time in Auschwitz, all the time in Ravensbrück, but in Spodau, I put a little rug around the buckle because I was half German, so why do I wear a belt with a Hebrew inscription? So I slowly took off the rug. I remember the rug I would have it now in my hand. And I was facing the sun, and it must have caught the eye of one of the soldiers, because it was shining, the belt. So not the belt, the buckle. And he walked towards me, but I still didn't know what nationality he is. He spoke German to me, but very bad German. So it's a bad German. It sounded nearly like Yiddish. But it wasn't Yiddish. It was German, but bad German. And he asked me, do you know what that is? Pointing at the Star of David. Yes, in the middle was the Star of David. I didn't tell you that. And being Jewish, I answered with a question. I said, do you know what that is? And he said, yes, it's the Star of David. So then I thought maybe he was a Jew. And I very, very quietly, I just whispered, I'm Jewish. And he said, so am I. Now, from that moment on, there were quite a few Jews there. And they really took care of us. We had six Jewish girls. All we wanted was bread, but they wouldn't give us a cow bread, nothing. Only semolina, porridge, rice, and then semolina, porridge, rice. So one night, myself and Justina, we went out to the field and found some potatoes. We brought them into the camp. And an MP, that is the military police, called us. He took the potatoes away. I said, you're worse than the Nazis. He said, are you hungry? I said, yes. So in 5 minutes, we had semolina, all of us. And I wanted to bite something. But how clever it was of them not to give us anything to bite. Well, they had very bad experience with other camps where they gave them bread and they gave them chocolate to eat. They didn't give us chocolate, but I didn't want chocolate. I wanted bread. I wanted to bite. Anyway, they kept us for about 3 weeks. They wouldn't let us out just to, so that we, well, I looked terrible because we were those 10 days in the cellar. And they fed us, I don't know, 5-6 times a day. You know what this. And then once a very high rank officer came in and he said, I think now is the time for you to go. Where would you like to go? And I said, to Poland. I'm from Poland, and all six of us said to Poland. But they wouldn't, out of the question, maybe because the Russians were there, they didn't want us to go where the Russians are. They said they had a special, there was a train going in 2 days' time to France. They had a special compartment for us to go to France. I said, look, I don't speak French. I have no profession whatsoever. I just matriculated. I have no family in France. He said, you won't need family, you won't need anything. You will have enough letters from us to American organizations, and they'll look after you. Right, well, we couldn't do anything else, so we went. And we came to Paris. First thing, they sterilized us, because we were dirty from the journey. It took quite a few days. Well, the trains didn't go properly, because that was May. May the, what, the 10th or the 15th, they kept us, I think, 2 weeks in the camp. And then they took us to a hotel called Lutetia. The hotel still exists. Because the French people wanted to know what happened in the camps. They were looking for people that they know, for family. I knew I had no family in France. Nobody from my family ever emigrated. We were from Poland, and everybody, all right, for holidays we went abroad. So I went out to the very end of the room. It was a huge room, and I was standing with my back to the door, talking to another girl. And all of a sudden, somebody touched me on the back and says, are you Bufetuna? I said, yes. She lived in France already 30 years. She left Benjamin 30 years ago. She knew my father when he was about that age. I was there after the camp, and I looked very much like my father. She said she was watching me, how I talk, and she said that must be something to do with the professor. And she just tapped me on the shoulders, and I said, yes. Well, from that moment on, I didn't need the American organizations, because there's a lot of people from our town that emigrated to France, and they really took care not only of me, but the other five. So, first of all, we lived in the Rue de Dupatin, that's near Montmartre, near Pigalle. That house belonged once to Rothschild. But he gave the house to people that came from camps. So we lived there. To eat, we had, like the other people had normal coupons, we had double coupons. So we had even too much. And they really looked after us, the French government, really. For instance, the metro, the tube, the tube. There was first class and second class in Paris. The first class, all the corner seats were for people that came from camps. That was in France, that was really in France. Here, when I was in the metro, and they saw my number on my hand, they asked me if it's my telephone number. But the English didn't know. Didn't know about it. So, I was in Paris, I think, about 2 weeks. And one night, about 12 o'clock, well, I called them friends, one of the people that knew my family in Poland came to me and said that there is an American rabbi, a forces rabbi, in her place, and he's telling them that he came from London, he was listening to the BBC, and he heard a man saying that he's looking for his wife, he's from Auschwitz, his wife lost a brother in Auschwitz, think you were ready about it, my friends, and listen, maybe it is your husband. So of course I dressed and I went with her. I spoke to the rabbi, and he said, all I can tell you is that he didn't say his name, but I can get it through the BBC. Just write a few words. Next day, I'm flying back to London, and through the BBC, I'll find him, and he will get that note. Next day in the evening, my husband phoned me from London, because he ran away during the march. My husband ran away from the march. He went to that was Silesia, Upper Silesia. He knew Upper Silesia well because his business was there. So he knew all the villages. And he went to one little hut, and he asked if he was still wearing his Auschwitz uniform. I didn't. I never had a uniform in Auschwitz. And she let him in, the woman. There was no man there, just the woman. All the men were in prisons, the Poles, prisoners of war, I mean, the Germans took them. She let him shave. So he went to the kitchen, and he shaved at the kitchen sink. Next to the sink was a window, and on the windowsill, he saw a Gillette. But you see, I would look at the Gillette 100 times and never think that comes from England. How did it get to Upper Silesia? But my husband is like this. When he looks, he sees. I look and don't see. He saw the Gillette and he asked her, where did you get the Gillette from? So he says there is a prisoners of war camp not far, English prisoners of war. And for a piece of bread, they gave us for something else, a piece of sausage, they gave us a Gillette. So my husband said, take me there, show me where it is. And she showed him where it is. It was just 5 minutes from where she lived. And he went into the camp. There was not one German there. They all ran away. And the English were sitting there and waiting. You know the English. In the queue, they stand in the queue, they never push. They were sitting there and waiting. My husband didn't speak English, a few words, but he spoke German. He must have learned a little bit of German, being there. So he told them, Germany, kaput, out, come out. So Percy Bell, he was looking, and there was an Englishman, who was our best friend, but he also died. Oh, I'll show you something, a letter from his wife I got 2 weeks ago. She found something about that, how my husband brought them to England. He didn't bring them, the ship brought them. Anyway, he told them, I will take you through Poland. They said in Odessa, there's a ship waiting for them. You know, from Silesia to Odessa, it's a long, long way. Odessa is on the, you know. But he did it. He trained, of course, once, for instance, a few times, the Russians stopped them and wanted to shoot them because they were in uniforms. So my husband said, Churchill, Stalin, friends. Churchill, they didn't shoot them. But in the British, they say that they shot quite a lot of French people, French soldiers. They didn't know who they are. Anyway, so they went through Poland to found places for them to sleep on the way. He even went to our town, which is not far from Auschwitz. Couldn't find anybody there from family. And by train and by cart, he did take them to Odessa. In Odessa, he said he would like to go to Palestine. But there was a telegram or whatever back there. He has to first to report in London. If he wants to go later to Palestine, he will go. Not under Begin. Begin wouldn't let him go. You know the story. Anyway, the journey was wonderful. Why was it so wonderful? Because they had a lot of stones. Everybody was sick. So my husband could eat for 10 people. And he gave him a uniform. And so he was wearing an English uniform. And he came to England. So he was the first one from Auschwitz to be in England. And of course, yes, BBC wanted him, and they paid him, I think, £2 per hour. That was a lot of money. And he told me that I wanted to talk for an hour, but they wouldn't let me. Anyway, that's how he came to England. But it wasn't so easy here. That he had a few times, yes, the Germans caught him. But luckily, they were telling jokes, and they were laughing. And said, while laughing, they covered their face or something, and get them off. But he had a few of the things. It wasn't so easy, as I said. But anyway,
So, what happened with this message?
That message,
if you could go on.
BBC. Mm-hmm. And that rabbi, he was a rabbi in the American forces, heard it. And just as a piece of conversation, he told my friends in Paris about it. And they already suspected that may be my husband. Because they said he's looking for a wife. The brother of the wife was hung in Auschwitz, and there is not many Jews that were hung in Auschwitz. Jews say burned. So that was already something different than anybody else. And that's why my friends came to me at 1 o'clock at night to go and see that rabbi. And I sent him a little note. I said, I don't know who you are, but I am Hala. If you can, try and phone me. And the next day in the evening I had a phone call.
What did he say?
But I had to wait for 9 months for a visa to leave. Shuta Evi was the home secretary. And then they wanted to give him some, I don't know, some medal or something, my husband. That is also in that letter from Frida Bell, that's the wife of Percy Bell. They live in Lake District. Oh, they love each other. But he died. She's such a lovely woman. And so he said, look, I don't want anything. All I want is my wife. And then after 9 months, I got a visa. It was a bit long.
What was that like, meeting your husband after all that time?
It was to Croydon. I flew to Croydon. And I wanted to look pretty, so I put mascara on. I never used mascara. I don't know why I used it. But then I saw him. I started crying. But very seldom, when in Auschwitz, I mean, I cried. And all that mascara was running on my face. But still. We lived in the green top towns. We had a Spanish room. And a lot of people helped us, people from Beijing especially. And that is how my husband got to meet us.
Well, was it easy to pick up the threads, you know, of your life together? You hadn't met. You'd been apart for some time, hadn't you? 43.
From 43, I came to England in 46.